and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. So nice to have you here on the podcast. Oh my, it's not quite winter, but man, it feels like winter. And you know what would be really good at this time of year? A nice, snug, warm, basic folk beanie. That's right, a basic folk beanie. If you've heard me talk about these before, they are available on my website. My mom has handmade these basic folk beanies, and there are new colors to choose from. You just need to let her know if there's any colors that you don't like, and she'll pick out one for you. We debuted them the other week at Basic Folk Live, which went over amazing. I mentioned it in the last podcast. We'll be releasing those episodes featuring Dinty Child and Rachel Lynn coming up in January. We're going to take a two-week break for the holidays, and then we'll be back with some Basic Folk Live. And in the meantime, though, you can go to my website, cindyhouse.net. You can order your Basic Folk beanie. Probably not going to arrive before the holidays, but, you know, it's cold. And that's a real good gift to give someone. If someone has a January birthday that you know of and loves podcasts and folk music and loves being basic, it's a great gift. CindyHouse.net. That's also where you can sign up for my email list and find all of my social medias and all of the episodes of Basic Folk from the past, all up on the website. Okay, today on Basic Folk, very pleased to have Abraham Alexander, who is a singer-songwriter and guitarist. He has an incredible life story. Born in Greece to Nigerian parents, immigrated to the United States when he was 11, and months after that move, his mom passed away, putting Abraham into foster care until he was adopted at age 16. He was also extremely athletic when he was younger and found community through sports and encouragement from his parents, who actually... This is an interesting story that he tells. His parents had an intervention with him when he was in his early 20s in order to convince him to pursue music. I think he was pursuing sports medicine, and they were like, listen, you got to do music. And he went on and started writing songs and playing guitar and released an EP earlier this year. Our conversation encompasses the story of his life, which is amazing, like I mentioned, as well as his friendship with Leon Bridges and also his connection to the musician Gary Clark Jr. He's also generous to answer some questions about his experience as a black man throughout this conversation. We talk about his younger self not fitting in with an all-white classmates in Greece and also being adopted by white parents. We also get into the topic of being an athlete and how his football coach would not let him quit. This was after he realized that he meant to sign up for soccer as a young European kid in Texas. He was like, oh yeah, I want to sign up for the football team. Except it was American football. And that led to one of the most important mentors and experiences of his young life. We have a great time with Abraham Alexander. I hope that you enjoy. He does have an EP that is self-titled and up on Spotify. We're going to listen to this song, Stay, which is from the EP, and then we'll get into our conversation with the wonderful Abraham Alexander on Basic Folk.
I was wrong, I know. Am I the one to blame? I found another home. Heard her calling out my name. Tell me if I go too far. Would I become the lonesome lone star? Tell me if I go too far. Would I ever find my way back? I wonder if I stay. Would I ever see home again? I wonder if I stay.
Abraham Alexander, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
I'm so looking forward to this conversation about high-level topics and deep thoughts. And I thought that we'd start right off with somebody wrote in an article, and So how I like prepare for these interviews is I just like blaze through like every single article I can find about you online and then like highlight things that interest me. So
awesome.
Someone wrote in an article, Alexander is a deep thinker.
Mm.
Have you always been a deep thinker? And how do you feel about being labeled that?
I think it might have just been the day. yes, I think it's always been a part of me. When I was younger, I didn't have a lot of friends, and so I was left alone with my own thoughts. So it has been since childhood, and I think sometimes it's better to not say anything and just be left to your own thoughts. Then yeah, I'm going on a tangent, but yes.
It's interesting to hear that you didn't have a lot of friends, because I have met you in person. And mm-hmm. you're so friendly and such a good listener and so interested in other people. What was that like for you? Why didn't you have any friends when you were younger? And then how do you think you've like honed those skills of like being able to connect with people so like immediately, so deeply?
Because I didn't have any friends back then, it helped me really focus on people and connect with people more because of the lack that I had when I was a kid. And I think it's because I was different, and people didn't understand that, and so they shied away from it. And I think, you know, back in the day, you know, I was born in 90, and so I think we were less acceptant of people who were different back then than we are now. I think right now we're so interested in being different and unique is more appreciated and brought to the forefront than it was in previous years.
Well, let's talk about your background a little bit to understand some more about how you are different, because just knowing certain things about you, I can make assumptions, but if we can talk about it in a little bit in more detail.
Absolutely.
You were born in Greece to parents Correct. Of Nigerian descent. And is it okay with you to talk about your family structure?
Absolutely.
You have birth parents from the Nigerian descent, and then you had parents who raised you. The parents who raised you, are they white?
Yes, they are.
So how did your birth parents get to Greece? Do you know that?
I don't know the full extent. No, my dad was a musician and traveled a lot. And my mom was a singer as well. And so I'm not sure quite how they got to Greece. I just know it was just through music. You know, I was born in Athens, Greece, and lived there for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we left was just the racial tension that was going on in Athens.
Was that surrounded by did it have a lot to do with the fact that your parents were white and you are not?
No, back then I was with my birth parents.
Oh.
When I was in Greece. Yeah. So when I was in Greece, I was with my birth parents. Along with my brother, we were the only black kids in the entire school.
Okay.
Not just that, but there's a college as well that was connected to the high school. And so literally the entire school, we were the only black kids there. Before that, my brother was the only black kid in the school until I came in.
Okay.
And so because of our makeup, I'm more of, back then I was more of the troublemaker and more someone to stir things up than my brother was. He's the peacemaker. And so when he's just like, I'm gonna just sit in the corner, I'm just gonna do this. Yeah, I was more of trying to push the envelope. And so, and that was not okay.
So it kind of, it sounds like, you know, that was your way of expressing your frustration with the situation of not being able to connect with any other kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 year old, just trying to figure out, like, I, because of my innocence, of, or the innocence of a child, I, the concept of racism wasn't in my world, wasn't in my sphere. And so I was trying to figure out what, like, what the difference was. I didn't know I was different. But I was trying to figure it out. And so, but I would blame it on other things, as to why they, as to why they didn't want to accept me. So I was saying it's because I'm faster than they are, in athletics, or I play, I'm a better football player, aka soccer, and that's why they don't want me on their team, and and that's why they're not picking me, or talking to me.
So before you got to Texas is when you attempted to pick up the guitar. When you were, was it when you were 8 years old?
It was probably when I was 10 or so.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I was, yeah, 9, 10, I tried to pick it up, and it was a fool's attempt at connecting in a way.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really work, and so put it right back down. And,
yeah, so the story is, I don't want to make you tell the story if you don't want to, like, relive it, but I do have a question about that. There is a story about you trying to connect with your father, and you thought, who was also a guitar player, and you thought that connecting over playing guitar would allow you to grow close, and like you said, it didn't work out, but I feel like that's a really intuitive thought for a young person. It's actually like a wonderful idea, and also a frequent way that one person connects to another person through playing and sharing guitar and sharing music. So after that didn't work, it sounds like you put down the guitar, but how did that change your idea of connecting to other people through playing music?
Ooh, that's so interesting. It wasn't music was just solely his thing, and because I saw how much time he spent doing that, I was like, okay, maybe if I try to make my way in his world in some way, or by showing interest, it would help. And so, you know, that's such a good question. So later on, I think that's more of a truth than it was back then for me. I think it was just, I want to pick it up because I see him spending so much time playing that when he's not at work or whatever. And maybe that will help.
And then I wonder, like, as an adult, when you picked the guitar up and started teaching yourself when you were 22, if you felt like a bit gun shy from sharing your music through guitar with other people, through friends, or whether it just like didn't affect you. And because you also seem like a person who is like very, you're like a very strong person who perseveres through adversity. So I'm just wondering like how you're approaching your playing guitar with other friends or other musicians in order to connect with them.
When I picked it back up, immediately I felt like the world was pushing me towards that direction. Like I had no choice but to share my music. You know, I would miraculously find myself in these places where I'm either hearing music or seeing people who are sharing their music, and that opened me more to do so. And, you know, there's a time I was going out to dinner, and I wound myself up next to this place called the Live Oak, which is an open mic in Fort Worth. And I sat there and I saw people That was the first time that I've ever been in an open mic scenario, and seeing strangers get up and sharing their songs to strangers was just like mind blowing. Before that, you know, I would see Joe, you know, singing whatever song trying to impress the girl, but this was not the case. It was just someone wanting to share what they've been working on in their bedroom for hours. And that encouraged me. That strength I wanted. That strength, like I was coveting that. And so I probably came back to that open mic three times before I actually shared my music. Just to see if it took some kind of special skill to actually make your feet moving before you got up there and shared your songs. And so I would like ask questions of like, hey, how long did you work on your music, or how long did you work on this? And I think it's because I was so afraid, you know, unbeknownst to me, of how that connection never took place when I was younger.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that's wild. Yeah. You know, like how it, so I was looking for that special chemistry that I needed to put together in order for me to get up there and make it work.
Yeah. I'm just like listening to you talk about it. I'm so glad that you eventually came back to music. Like, you tried again, despite the fact that you were so not encouraged. You were completely discouraged when you were younger. And then as soon as you realized the fact that, like, you cannot not play music, and then it must have just felt like this, like, beautiful, like, heart-opening experience for you once you just, like, fully embraced it and went back to it again.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the things we run away we run from the most is probably, if we face them, could be our salvation, could be our awaken or realization. And that was the case for me. And because of music, I feel more myself than I've ever felt. And it was that was the key that, or has been the key that has unlocked doors for me that I didn't think were possible, but thought of when I was a kid that I would do because of another medium. But music was, it was that kryptonite that I saw when I was a kid. And finally, when that wasn't a fear for me anymore, or something negative that I saw it as, yeah, it really helped me hone in on who I am. And honestly, it's probably music that I listen more, because I'm trying to hear, you know, one of my sayings is everyone has something to say. You just need to let them say it. And when they do say it, then you know who they naturally are.
There also must have been this slight panic or slight turmoil where you realize, like, okay, I have to play music, but that's what my dad did, and I don't want to be like him. Like, you realize that you play guitar the same exact way as him. Can you explain how your feelings about, like, that particular realization and, you know, trying to find your own identity within something that like was the identity of your father, who is like somebody that you don't want to be like, how your feelings about music and being connected to him have evolved over time?
When I started, that was that was the first thought that crossed my mind. And one of the obstacles that I needed to jump over was just the connection with him, because prior to that, I didn't have to think about him that much. I didn't have to think about the hurts and the questions that much. But as soon as I grabbed that guitar, like, he was more in my mind, and his makeup was more in my mind, and our DNA connected more because of that. And when music started shaping more for me, and I saw it more as the future, the more it scared me, because I started to think, will I become just like him, or is history going to repeat itself through me? And that was a big fear for me. And so I started to treat people differently. I saw how it was connecting me more with people rather than disconnecting me more. Like I feel like it did with him and I. And then I started to really love it and love the music and not so much our relationship, but it made me forgive, you know, it made me forgive, especially through writing. You know, I wrote a song called 335 and it very much touches on that subject, but I forgave, and it was more so of me accepting my present, and not tying in, not trying to seek a future where I've already painted it or reach back for a past that's already gone. But staying present and making sure that I'm connecting with as many people as possible, and I'm trying to love as many people as possible through music rather than shun them off.
When you moved to Texas at 11, mm-hmm. How did you feel about moving, and what did you think of Texas?
So as soon as I touched on Texas soil, I looked up and I began to cry, because I knew, like, I looked at the sky and it was completely different, and I started to cry, and it was so foreign to me. Already I was in a place where, you know, even though I would say that childhood wasn't as rainbow as I wish that it was, that was still my comfort zone. And so going somewhere where I'm not, you know, I was again different, you know, I was afraid, I was scared. Yeah, like just it was more question marks for me, mm-hmm. that I didn't know if I have the strength or the courage to tackle.
As someone who moved so far from Greece to Texas, it sounds like it took a little bit of a transition for you to feel at home. And I'm interested about your feelings on the meaning of home and how you maybe cultivated it in your new home and how you feel about it now.
After a while, you know, I did begin to make friends. And within that friendship, I would find my courage, and through those friendships, I would unlock more parts of myself. And, you know, my family now, they're my best friends. And I like that in a sense is home for me. And Texas has become that for me. It's the people who have poured life into me and show me what life is truly about. And that's really where I hone in. And honestly, now I can go, I mean, I love Texas because of the people that are in it. But I feel like I can go anywhere in the world, as long as I transplant those people from Texas there, that I could survive. But you know, I love the state. It's weird. Like every, it's wild to say that, you know, like I how much I love a state, but I truly do. Like having the honor to travel to a lot of states this year and actually see in different countries, every time I'm there, I just like, nope, not Texas. Like every single time. But at the end of the day, it's the people that make up your, you know, the circle, and it's mm-hmm. because of them that I've fallen in love with this place. It truly makes me happy. Like, and I think it's taking such a long time to appreciate it, you know, just mm-hmm. not feeling like you belong for such a long time, and finally just being somewhere and just resting and being able to say, this is my home, this is where I belong, and there are people who will love me whether I'm this or I'm that, or just love me unconditionally, and knowing that is a truth.
So another question I have is about being in Texas and your relationship with other kids at the time, if you were able to make friends, and also maybe how it felt for you, because I would imagine that there were more Black children to be around, if that had any impact on you to have Black friends when you were younger for the first time, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I immediately, as soon as I got here, or when I was in middle school, that helped me. So I started playing football and American football, and I saw the way just sports, one, gave me the opportunity to lash out in anger in a healthy way, if you would say, and but also having and being forced to work with someone else and being forced to connect
like
with
a
someone.
Team.
Yeah, a team.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw what a coach was able to do, because my coach became my first mentor, you know. Mm. And
can you tell me more about your coach?
Yeah, the first day of practice, we ran a 100-yard dash, and I beat everyone by like 10 yards. I'm not bragging. This is true.
Oh my God. He must have been so pumped. Like, look at this guy.
He was. He was like, oh my goodness. We got this kid from Greece and we're good, you know?
Yeah.
And
you, were you speaking English?
You know, not well. This is like me trying. So I was probably good. I can quote some good movies to connect, to connect. But I would say I was maybe about 80%. Yeah. So we ran, but then the next day we're getting pads and we get it fitted. And then I'm realizing, oh, this is American football. And so I'm trying to quit. Like, no, I don't want to play American football.
Oh, you meant to play soccer.
Soccer. Yeah. So they signed me up for soccer. And so I get there and I'm trying to quit. And he goes, I'm not allowing you to quit. You just beat everyone on my team, even my fastest player from last year by 10 yards. And so he's like, hey, I'll teach you the game. Like, I'll teach you how to play and I'll buy you dinner. And that was like the first, he didn't allow me to quit something that I started or quit something that I think that I might not like, in a sense. And that was what helped me connect with kids different than me, and that's how I began to have friends and have this relationship. So I played throughout my high school and I almost played in college. I was that guy who would sit, you know, would sit with everyone. So I would literally sit with the guys playing Pokemon cards. I would sit with cheerleaders. I would go see it with the 4.0 kids, the nerds, if you would. But I loved, one, I was very fascinated how people migrated, because it was so foreign to me, how people migrated because of that one thing. Like, this is what defines us. And so we're going to migrate and we're not going to sit with everyone else.
You're probably also doing like a huge data download of like American teenage culture, and also like you have a lot of catching up to do when it comes to like socializing with other kids. So yeah. Like, you must have been like quite the sociologist at the time.
Oh, I loved it. I genuinely like loved it, and just the not just the sociology, but the psychology behind it of why are they. Like, why are they sitting like that? Like, why are they dividing, like, naturally dividing themselves up? I'm thinking, I love all these things and I don't want, like, how do I choose? Why should I choose?
I want to know a little bit more about, and I do realize that, like, I'm a white lady asking a black man to, like, tell me more about your connection to, like, other black kids and black families. But I'd like to hear more about that, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I don't know if that was more in high school. I think, or when exactly, but it might have been when I was like 16, 17 years old, where I felt like I needed to connect more with other black kids and see their struggles and seeing if we're similar. You know, at first there was that you're not really black or you don't know the struggle that we've been through here in the States, and your struggle back from where you're from is completely different. But I was more fascinated with the struggle, and not just that, but also the dynamic and the culture, and there's a certain language when black people get together, and there's that tonality that's completely different than I feel like when any other culture. But and I think it's that love that just when you get amongst each other, just the way you joke, just the way you interact is completely different. And I wanted that, like I saw it and I wanted it, like I not just want it, but I wanted to experience it or see what that was. And it was very unique to me. And it took a while for them to accept me. And I think it was because it took a while for me to accept myself. But once I did, I wasn't trying to fake that. You know, I wasn't trying to fake that language. I wasn't trying to fake that feeling. You know, it's interesting, the intuition that is within the culture. Yeah, my friends were very intuitive in the fact that maybe I was trying to make them a study, but they were like, maybe you should study yourself, bro. And yeah. And, you know, when I was okay with myself and okay with who I was, and the fact that that's, our stories aren't the same, and that's okay, that I was accepted.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that journey of accepting yourself. I got this quote from you somewhere on the internet. I can be myself and am good enough just by being myself. So can you talk a little bit more about your journey with feeling like you are enough? And it sounds like your friends really helped you through that journey, and sports really helped you through that journey, and maybe music helped you along that journey as well.
You know, with, you know, my friends were very instrumental in that, where, you know, when we're playing sports, there are multiple people who play that same position. But because multiple people play that position doesn't mean that multiple people see the things the same way that you do, or have that one innate skill that you do. And, you know, we idolize a lot of athletes, you know, playing a game. You know, you have someone who puts their socks on a certain way and puts their socks on, you know, wristband, headband, just like a athlete in the NFL or you know, playing a professional sport, and like that's, it's normal to do that. Like, oh man, I'm gonna wear my socks like David Beckham, and because of that, like, I'm going to play like him, or whatever it is. And so I was one, I, you know, when I got to high school, I'm still fresh to the game, and so, you know, I was naturally good, but I was also trying to be like someone who on the team who plays a certain thing. And so I think once I realized that, or not being that soccer guy who plays football, but once I realized that that was okay, And that was a great thing because I can use those attributes and incorporate them with this game and make me a better teammate and make me a better player because of it and be more of an asset to the team. But that story, that lesson, I think I've repeated in different ways. Mm. And that's been the healing for me. You know, I've just been seeing it in different increments. Mm. You're enough just being yourself to be loved. You're enough just being yourself to be accepted. You're enough just being yourself, and you would do more healing because there aren't people, there's not a second you. And there are things that you have to offer that someone else doesn't, even though you might play the same position, doesn't mean that you two are similar or you two are, you know, the same, like, because he, you know, he's a running back. Like, you see the field in a different way that he does because of who you are, because of your makeup. And so, like, accept that and own it. And because you own it, you can really come to yourself. And I don't, there's a different step that you have once you truly accept yourself. Mm. You know, it's weird. Like, you know, just talking about, like I need to accept myself. But we really come through that, and I think it's the fear behind the mask of, well, the fear of the demons and the fear of, again, not being enough. But, you know, I think that was the first gate. You know, was I am enough and I'm cool. And before, I was making up the reason why people didn't like me, and it was because I was being myself and because of who I was. And so I was trying to, maybe if I'm not myself, I'll be like people will accept me more. As I got older, that was completely different. And so, yeah, that I'm not sure where we got lost.
I'm not lost. Yeah. I'm right here with you.
Okay, good. Yeah, but it was hey, through sports and by being yourself, like, and taking that mask off. And I think right now too, like, just in society in general, like, we're trying to do that. Like, can I take my mask off? Like, am I enough? There's so and so who's a musician, and I want to, you know, emulate him, or I'm inspired by him, or someone's like, oh, you sound like so and so, and there's that fear. But if I can remember correctly, that quote was me saying that I can do more help by being myself and owning that truth and not trying to write someone else's story, but write my own. And by doing that, I can connect more, and I can connect me because that is my truth. My story and my past is my truth, and I can't change it or emulate someone else's. But I can connect more, whether that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1,000, whatever it is. I can just be myself, and I don't have to change it or lie about anything. Like, that is enough. And I need to just own it.
Can you talk about the impact of Gary Clark Jr.?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So Gary's such a phenomenal artist, but he was the first artist that I saw when I was like learning how to play guitar. And so I was watching just videos online on how to play. And then I saw like his image just kind of pop up on like the next cue, like that was queuing up, or suggested videos to watch, and I hit it, and I was like, oh my lord, and immediately just the passion and the soul. And I felt like he had a lot to say, and he said it, and you knew it, and he was saying it like he wasn't looking for your approval for it. He was just kind of like saying his truth and letting it be. And I connected with that so much, and just the pure passion and energy jumped out on the screen for me. And yeah, that was like my first introduction to Gary.
Also, seeing someone who looks like you playing like that must have had a huge impact.
Oh, 100%, you know. And it's like watching a movie and putting yourself in that like main character of like, that could be me, or I see, or like I see myself like doing that, or I see like I connect with this person because of this, and just encourage me, like I, you know, you be besides Jimi Hendrix, there wasn't like that prominent black, you know, man. That was like that. You just saw the passion, like you had like. Like now that I know my history, I know there's like B.B. King and all these others, but like
they don't make like tapestries of B.B. King the way they do of Jimi Hendrix, though.
yes, true. Like you've never seen that like young, energetic and like just that makeup. Like you haven't seen that, and so for me it was the. You know, I connected with that so much, and not that like, oh my God, I want to be just like him, but it was more like it was like a sign. It was like looking, driving, and seeing a billboard sign, and one of those like, hey, you can have a burger as well. you know what? Like one of those is like the calling mm-hmm. out to you. And that it was like the calling card. Watching that video was a calling card. Yeah, it was crazy. It was like this like energy and this wave that leaped out from the screen and just hit me like a brick. And I went to a show, and it was one of the most electrifying shows I've ever been to.
Wow.
That like just watching him play, watching him perform, and you know, taught me to like, just when performing, like I felt like there's no way he's gonna perform tomorrow. And so that's kind of how I look at shows that I play.
Yeah.
You know, is try to leave it all like there's no tomorrow.
What about your friendship with Leon Bridges? I read that he's a person who really encouraged you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So when the open mic started, that was one of the friendships that manifested. You know, it's crazy because he introduced me to Gary, and again, it's one of those things that because I took a step of faith, and because I took a leap, that all these dots started to connect and all these doors started to open. But yeah, Leon has been such a good friend to me over the years, and yeah, besides my family, one of the biggest encouragements of music and believers and what I have to say.
What's your take on the fact that like an artist like Gary Clark Jr., Leon, Michael Kiwanuka, Brittany Howard are these like incredibly charismatic, brilliant black musicians who have mostly a white audience? Do you see that as an issue, or have you thought about that at all?
I have. In a way where we've had conversations about this in different ways. We're trying to realize like, hey, is it because of the type of music that we play? Or is it because, you know, because it's not hip hop dominant, and I would say that's where just the culture seems to fly, and R&B and more of that sort of music, or is it that the tickets are too high, or what is it about the style of music that we play that makes it be a more white or predominant of a white audience? And you know, I think the conclusion we came to was, in conclusion, like, you should just worry about the music and worry about just the pureness of the art and connecting, you know. The people that connect with you will connect with you. Now doesn't mean that when it comes to issues of race and issues of injustice that we can't speak about them. But when it comes to who our audience is, you know, you can't really control that. Like, you can't control who you connect with, and you can't control who is affected and changed by your music. And that's just one of those things where you just kind of let go and let who you touch be touched. You know, like, you can't force someone to connect to your music, or you can't force someone to come out. So, but like, if the reason why they can't come out is because of a issue that you can rectify, then do so. But if it's just like who vibes with your song and who doesn't, then like, you can't control that. I can, with my music, put something out there where I can change the perspective of someone. Like, I can't most likely change who they are, but if I can change their perspective and or bring a dialogue to what they're saying, you know, whether good or bad, like, hey, have you heard the song? And, you know, they're listening to it and they listen to the truth behind the song, then I think I can bring some light.
So let's round out this interview with talking about seemingly one of your favorite places, London.
Yes.
You have been producing music in London these days. Did you produce your new EP there?
I did. Okay. I did. So I jumped between there and a place called Modern Electric here in Dallas.
Oh, great.
Also, I recorded America. So I had America a while back, and so I already recorded that song at a place called Space Wayne Fort Worth. So it's kind of like a special blend of places.
So what about the city of London or the people that inspires your trust in building a musical community there?
You know, it was more so I felt like I was back home, and I was back home, but not just that, but I was back home, so I was feeling myself, but I was also the outsider. So it was like I was back to square one. And I took this journey as me rediscovering myself and me being alone, not knowing anyone, but back in Europe, back in where I grew up in a country that speaks English. And so and so close to America. So like, I was here and it was mostly the culture and them, me just diving in and also them seeing me as an American. And so I'm an outsider, but still like they can ask questions about like where I'm from and they're intrigued. And I was, you know, in the States, I was the guy who's got the accent. You know, I was the guy who had the accent, but I was completely normal, and like people were intrigued by that. And so I just fell in love with just the culture and the art and the history, and I just felt inspired like no one's business. Just immediately as I stepped foot into that country, like it was like a faucet was just, you know, on, and I couldn't help but create.
Oh, man, this has been great. I've got one more task for you before we let you go.
Ooh.
We do this like very silly thing called the lightning round on Basic Folk, where I ask you fun, simple questions about yourself and you give like one word answers or however you want.
This. So,
all right, you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, what was the first song you learned on the guitar?
Ooh, Extreme, More Than Words.
Wow. Lakes or beaches?
Beaches.
What is your karaoke song?
All of Me, John Legend.
Okay, I already know the answer to this. Dogs or cats or something else?
Dogs.
But tell me how you feel about Dottie the cat.
It's like one of the most gorgeous cats that I've ever seen in my entire life. Just like very... what was that? Like just it knows that he's special. Like it just knows, and just like just the way it walks is like I'm a god. Oh
yes,
crazy.
I believe, I don't know if you or Amy were saying this all night. I think it was Amy saying Dottie could be a model, like all night. Oh. Whenever you guys met her, it was so great.
Oh, 100%. I like it was that just that deus. Demeanor that she had. It's wild. And it was just like, I need you to pet me while I eat, please.
Well, I also just want to let you know she's been in the room the whole time. We've been talking.
Course, yes. Of course she has.
All right, back to the lightning round. What is your favorite U.S. city?
Texas.
The whole state.
The whole state.
Do you remember the first album you bought with your own money?
I would have to say, what was it? I don't, which is awful. I honestly, I no. It was an Akon CD.
Oh my god, perfect.
Yeah, it was an Akon CD. Oh my,
what a punk!
I know.
What was the last book that you read?
It was The Alchemist.
All right.
Have you read that book by chance?
I don't remember, actually, if I've read it. I feel like I have. Doesn't everyone feel like they've read it?
Yes, but in some way know kind of what it's about. But it's I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, but I think it's like Paolo or Paolo, something like that. But yeah, it was good. I felt like I needed... You know, I just finished my first tour, and you know, it's about a traveler, and I felt like I needed that. So it was like a good timing to read that book.
What is your dream collaboration?
Gary and I.
Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
Gibson or Fender?
Gibson.
You sure?
That's all I play right now, but I love Fenders. It's Gibson.
Okay. Would you rather be able to fly or be invisible?
Fly.
What is the most beautiful place you've ever visited?
Ooh, Canada. Banff.
Wow. All right. Abraham Alexander, that is all for the lightning round.
Ooh, ching ching. I'm hearing bells go off.
Yeah, what a great lightning round.
No, thank you so much. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. That was great. Yeah,
thank you.
That was really, really cool. Absolutely.
Once again, Abraham Alexander. His EP, self-titled, is up now. It's on Spotify. Look out for him on tour and in future releases. He's just a marvelous performer if you ever get a chance to see him play. And also thanks to Amy for helping me set up our conversation with Abraham Alexander. Basic Folk is produced by Adam Corey with assistance from Laura McCarthy. Lindsay Myers is our business manager. Alex Stanton of Townspeople produces our music. I'm your host, Cindy Howes. Basic Folk beanies, hand-knit by my mom, Pat Howes, and you can find yours at cindyhowes.net. That's where you can also sign up for my newsletter. And if you want to rate and subscribe to Basic Folk on iTunes, that is also very helpful. And I think that is all I have to say. All right, thanks. Bye.